So, Ellen, let me ask you a question.
Shoot.
What's the government's role in Australia's tech sector?
That's a tough one. I'm Ellen Leibeder.
And I'm Josh Nicholas.
Over the past few segments, we've been investigating Australia's nascent knowledge economy, the industry that many government types thinks holds the key to our future economy.
So far, we've mostly been talking about the challenges that this new sector faces, things like access to capital, a possible shortage of techies, and our rickety old internet.
But depending on your philosophy, the government could be both a challenge as well as a saviour.
A lot of the techies we've been talking to were downright libertarian and thought the government should get out of the sector entirely. For them, the government can't help, so it should try and be as little of a hindrance as possible.
To be fair to them, some of Australia's regulations were clearly hurting. For example, you may have this image in your head of early employees in tech companies getting stock in the company.
It's very common in America. Early employees in Google and Facebook received shares in their companies. For Google and Facebook, who didn't have a lot of money at the time, it helped them convince some of the best and brightest to work for them. For the employees, it gave them a stake in the profits.
And boy, did that pay off. This isn't really possible in Australia because of some bizarre tax rules. It's rather tedious and complex, so we're not going to go into it. The government did recently change the rules, although not everyone is happy about it.
When is everyone ever happy?
True, but if we look beyond a government that just wants to get out of the way of the industry, there are loads of interesting case studies. When we talked to Aaron Birkby, a mentor at Silicon Lakes, he outlined a number of things that other countries do to encourage and foster their tech industries.
I remember being in San Francisco, I think it was 2 years ago, and Canada had big, massive billboards up saying, move your startup to Canada. Lots of other countries have landing pads in Silicon Valley, so they actually have incubators for their startups based in San Francisco. Say Norway. If you're a Norway-based or Norwegian startup, you can actually go and work in San Francisco, but still you're in sort of a home ground turf. They have tax incentives, so I know New York City introduced some really hefty tax incentives, but same with Singapore. Ireland, I think, has a 3% tax rate for startups. So I think there's a number of examples overseas of things that we could be doing.
All of those sound great, but I think you missed the most interesting initiative of all.
And what was that?
Pitch at the Palace.
There's a funny thing in the UK. So London is doing really well in the startup space. And one of the things they do is just random stuff, like they host startups at Parliament House. They have a thing which is pitch at number 10, so you go and get a chance to pitch your startup to the Prime Minister. There's also pitch at the Palace, so you can go and pitch to the Queen and the Princes. But what it does, right, it sounds sort of corny, but what it does is it sends a public message that startups are critically important and we need to be focusing time here.
Wait. So techies in England can pitch their ideas for apps or dongles or whatever to the Queen?
I think it's the Duke of York, actually, but essentially right. For a number of years now, English techies have been able to bend the ear of the Prime Minister or the Palace. It may be a stunt, but it's about showing how important the sector is.
So after hearing all this from Aaron, we decided that we should talk to our own politicians, ask them what they envision for the knowledge economy.
And it didn't go well.
No, it really didn't. Josh, you couldn't get a hold of Ian Macfarlane, the Minister for Industry and Science.
Nope. I spent more than 5 weeks emailing his media rep. First he wanted to do it, and then they lost my email, and then there were scheduling conflicts. Eventually they just said no.
No.
You couldn't get near a phone for 5 minutes?
Apparently not. And of course, you had similar problems with the Communications Minister, Malcolm Turnbull.
Yep, that's right. I talked to one media rep who put me onto another media rep, and then I left more messages and they never got returned.
But we did manage to get a hold of Adam Bandt, who at the time was still the deputy leader of the Greens.
Yes, I had a rather interesting chat with Adam, and it started off like this.
We're potentially going to wake up to find that we're just a hollowed out, uneducated quarry. What will set up Australia for the future is us being an educated country and us being able to rely on our brains and on innovation to power Australia. We're not going to be able to compete with China or India on wages. We're not going to be able to just continually dig it up, chop it down and ship it off. our well-being, but also the country's economic success, is going to depend on investing and growing knowledge industries.
Hollowed out, uneducated quarry. It's a beautiful turn of phrase, but God, that sounds horrific.
Yeah, and there was a lot more where that came from. You can imagine there was quite a lot of criticism of the current government from Mr. Bant, but we eventually got to his proposals and he talked about the importance of science and maths in schools and that we need a better NBN.
The way that we'll boost the country's productivity is through investment in infrastructure like the NBN, especially as if we are going to say that knowledge is one of our areas of competitive strength, then we absolutely need something like an NBN.
But Adam Bant isn't the only big fish we landed. We also spoke to Labor Senator Kim Carr.
Yes, now you may remember Kim Carr was the Minister for Innovation, Industry, Science and Research. God, that's a mouthful. Back when Labor was in power.
It's a very similar portfolio to Minister McFarlane.
Right, and he's currently the Shadow Minister for a number of things, including innovation and industry.
And Senator Carr's major emphasis was moving beyond taxation and providing a holistic suite of programs and grants to address the wide variety of startups out there, some of which were implemented by the previous Labor government.
It's not just a question of the taxation system itself. That's only one element. Crowdfunding, whatever the mechanism that is being used, it's got to be part of a suite of measures. And there will be many different types. This is the one case where you don't put all your eggs in one basket.
But possibly the most interesting thing that Senator Carr said during our meeting was that he thinks Australian banks are hostile towards tech startups. They don't understand them and won't lend to them.
Something a lot of our entrepreneurs have echoed.
Exactly. So what he is suggesting is for an alternate method of financing to be explored. Maybe something along the lines of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which invests in clean energy projects, thereby encouraging others to invest as well.
Now, having said all of that, we need to find better ways to give people access to finance, and venture capital is one of them, but there are grant programs are another way.
So, there's a lot there to digest.
Should the government get involved in the knowledge economy or make itself as small as possible?
And if it does decide to go in, should it take out ads in Silicon Valley, change the tax system, build the best version of the NBN, or create a new finance corporation?
Or hold pitching competitions at the lodge?
You really love that idea, don't you?
Yes, I want to pitch for the Queen.
Well, that's all we have for this segment of our knowledge economy series.
Hope we provided enough fodder for some lively dinner debates.
I'm Ellen Liebeder.
And I'm Josh Nicholas.
Tune in next time when we take a look at Australia's entrepreneurial culture.